From Selinsgrove Grove to Indiana, Phillipsburg to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, inflation is running at a 40-year high, eating away the purchasing power of consumers. Why is this happening, and what is the impact on both people and state government? David Taylor and our Capital Watch crew are here to discuss. And Governor Tom Wolf wants education spending to be his legacy, but the governor's true legacy is his inept and deadly handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. The crowded field of candidates seeking the Republican nomination for governor got a little less crowded this past week as State Senator Scott Martin of Lancaster County suspended his campaign. Martin suffered a fall back in January and sustained an injury that would take him off the campaign trail. Martin's withdrawal leaves 13 candidates remaining in the field. The most recent round of polling, this conducted by the Trafalgar Group, shows former Congressman Lou Barletta and State Senator Doug Mastriano leading in that Republican governor's race. Barletta was the choice of 24% of the respondents, with Mastriano receiving about 20% of the vote. None of the other candidates cracked into double digits, but there remains a significant number of undecided voters. Trafalgar also polled the contest for the Republican nomination for the United States Senate, and the candidates spending freely on television advertising lead the field. Dr. Mehmet Oz currently leads with 27% of the vote, followed by Dave McCormick with 16%. Former Denmark Ambassador Carla Sands is in third place with about 15%. As with the race for governor, about a quarter of the voters remain undecided. The opening day of deer hunting season is a time-honored tradition in Penn's Woods, so the decision to open the season the Saturday after Thanksgiving rather than the following Monday was a controversial one. However, a survey compiled for the Pennsylvania Game Commission found that, despite some vocal opposition, only 27% of hunters surveyed opposed changing the opening day. No word on what the deer think of the situation. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Jimmy Carter was in the White House, and the Soviet Union still existed the last time the inflation rate was this high. What policies have triggered this spike in inflation, and can it be brought under control? Our Capital Watch crew is here with an in-depth look at the problem. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. And in the studio, I've got your Capital Watch All-Stars, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, great to be with you.
So glad to be back here again, David. Thank you.
Outstanding. And our friend Steve Bloom, Vice President of Pennsylvania's free market think tank, the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve.
Thank you, David. Great to be here.
Outstanding. So we survived budget week. We saw Governor Wolf propose his completely preposterous 17% spending increase that is, by all accounts, dead on arrival up on the Hill. And, Steve, it makes me wonder if anybody has learned the lessons of government overspending fueling inflation.
You know, David, right now we're looking at a situation that Americans haven't faced for almost half a century. Rapidly rising inflation. And rapidly rising inflation is a danger to our well-being. And in particular, it hurts certain categories of the economy, certain people more so than others. Who does it hurt the most? Hurts anybody on a fixed income. It definitely hurts people who have invested in cash, who have bank deposits, that sort of investment, their wealth will be eroded rapidly by inflation. It hurts, in other words, the most vulnerable segments of our society, most typically the older folks who are on a fixed income. It also hurts our manufacturers and businesses that have long-term contracts for products, where they enter negotiations today and they have to deliver in a year or a year and a half. If inflation has overtaken the business proposition of that contract, it is extremely damaging to our manufacturer and commercial sectors. So there's a lot of danger in inflation. There are a few people who benefit from inflation, those who have invested in assets that are rising quickly in price along with the inflation rate. And especially if they have a lot of debt, they can sometimes outpace their debts. But that's an odd subset. It's not a healthy economic impact. It's sort of the luck of the draw.
Correct.
Are you going to be hurt or helped by this?
Well, inflation is a thief that steals from everyone.
Correct.
And especially when you have inflation outpacing wage growth, that the purchasing power of the dollars of everyday consumers, it's being eroded.
And we've even seen now wholesale inflation is outpacing consumer inflation, which is boding ill for the next report, because that means that wholesale inflation is simply going to be passed on to consumers. So that's a harbinger of worse inflation to come. And all of this, getting back to your original question, all of this driven by, first of all, federal government policy pumping untold trillions of dollars into the economy when there are already supply shortages and supply chain disruptions.
Yes.
People have money in hand to spend, but they can't get the products they want or the people, the personnel, the labor they need. And it's driving that inflationary monster. And now you have someone like Governor Tom Wolf trying to do the same thing here with massive multi-billion dollar increases in state spending.
Well, I took a look at the Independent Fiscal Office puts out a report every year here in Pennsylvania ahead of the budget hearings, which is where we are here right now in the midst of the budget hearings. And Steve is exactly right in who this inflationary pressure that we're seeing right now is really hurting, because of all of the things that they measure, the highest increase in inflation this past year was in energy. 25% up this year in energy, and 20% last year energy costs went up. And also durable goods, 19% increase this year and 23% last year. So those two areas, energy and durable goods, are what we all need every day.
Correct.
That's what everybody needs to live their lives. They need to heat their homes. They need to drive their cars, and they need to purchase items that they need for their everyday lives. So Steve's exactly right. This is hurting the folks most who can least afford to continue to pay for those items.
When energy prices go up, because energy is necessary for every single step of industrial production and transportation, that there's a layering effect that raises costs, and costs for the producer that then get passed along to the consumers. And, Rebecca, especially in your industry, for the listeners, if you've ever purchased something in a store, yeah, it was delivered by truck.
Exactly.
And
yep.
and so when transportation prices go up, the price of goods go up because, again, that those goods had to be, whether it was the component parts or the inputs, had to be driven to the factory, the finished goods driven from the factory to the warehouse, like every single step that requires energy. If those costs are rising, then cumulatively, it's going up much faster.
That's right. Diesel prices are up above $4 a gallon now nationally, which is the highest they've been in 8 years. So that's sort of the energy piece of the puzzle, which, as you said, sort of is at every step through the process, every point at which, raw goods are sold to manufacturers and then manufactured goods are sold throughout the process until they finally make it to the consumer. Almost all those points along the way are delivered by truck. But it's not just the gas and diesel
prices. Well, it's electricity,
prices.
Too.
It's electricity. That's right. But then and we're also seeing pandemic issues, like Steve mentioned, the workforce crisis. So we have a lack of truck drivers right now. There are 80,000 missing truck drivers in our economy, that if we had those truckers, we might be able to deal better with the supply chain crisis that we have now. But we don't. So, of course, those workforce issues are percolating throughout all aspects of the economy,
right.
Not just the supply
all
chain.
Sectors.
Right. But they build on each other so that those costs are just, percolating throughout the entire economy and all the supply chain. So it's just one thing on top of the other. And the wholesale prices, like Steve mentioned, I hadn't heard that. The fact that they're rising higher than consumer goods is really worrisome, because that we're going to see that wave hit consumer prices.
And this is the inflation that Joe Biden and his administration kept calling transitory. They kept saying this is only a temporary thing. It's going to get better quickly. When you see wholesale prices rising faster than consumer prices, you know it's heading in the wrong direction. It's not getting better. And the next thing that will happen, because this was all predictable.
Yes,
absolutely.
I myself, all of us around this table predicted that if the government spent that kind of money, it was going to drive inflation. It did. The other entirely predictable thing about government, the very people who drove the inflation, they're going to make the most insane or counterproductive policy choices to try to stop inflation that can possibly be made. Already you're hearing people like Senator Elizabeth Warren talk about wage and price controls. They're going to want the government now to step in and try to fix the problem it solved, not by making the economy sound, but instead by having government say the price of these goods and services are now fixed, which is going to only cause more distortion and disruption in the economy and prolong the suffering.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's exactly what happened in the 70s, that President Nixon instituted wage and price controls, which only intensified the economic crisis.
The pressures are still there. You're just putting a temporary lid on a pot of boiling water, and you can only hold it there for so long. And then the lid pops off the pot, boiling water sprays everywhere, and that's what you're looking at in terms of analogy to what happens if you tried to put the lid on inflation artificially.
Well, and the one of the ways that we could address inflation in a positive sense would be to maximize domestic energy production.
Exactly.
Like if we would build out the infrastructure to deliver, Pennsylvania energy, U.S. energy domestically, remove the regulatory burdens that inhibit production, then we could open the spigot, get more of whether it's petroleum or electricity or natural gas to consumers, and that increased supply would help meet demand and reduce costs, reduce price pressures, and again that would help to alleviate this drive behind inflation. But the first thing that Joe Biden did in office was he pulled the plug on the Keystone XL pipeline, that he yanked the permits for a drilling in Alaska, that he banned harvesting energy on federal lands, and so on and so on and so on. And so, it's no surprise that if you restrict energy supply and that the demand for energy continues to grow. I mean, the U.S. consumes, it's like 20 million barrels of petroleum a day. That's the level of demand for energy in our economy. And, you say we're going to replace that with windmills or solar panels or hamster wheels or whatever, teeny tiny little incremental delivery of energy, is fashionable today. It makes it impossible for our economy and our society to function at the level that we've become accustomed to.
And all of which not only drives the inflationary pressure, but it creates geopolitical pressure. It makes our nation weaker in terms of our ability to influence and keep peace around the world, and empowers people like the Russians, who are able to use their natural resources to essentially as a bludgeon against and any countries in their general region or even around the world. And they're able to do that because we've stood down in the United States, thanks to Joe Biden, who said, no, we don't want to be the world's leading producer of energy. We don't want to be the geopolitical leader. We want to cede that to someone else.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. So when we look at where we are with the economy, with inflation on the rise and energy prices increasing, the earning power, the purchasing power of Pennsylvania consumers, Pennsylvania families diminishing, what's this going to mean for Pennsylvania politics and for the public policy debate in Harrisburg this year?
Well, right now, the Republican majorities in both the House and the Senate in Pennsylvania are digesting Governor Wolf's budget proposal. And I and my colleagues have talked with many of them already, And they're telling us that this is not going to fly. Governor Wolf's 16.6% spending increase is not going to fly. That we have to be responsible, that we have to use the remaining federal dollars that came in under the COVID relief programs to fix one-time expenditures, but not to set up new programs that will require continual state funding.
Right.
We want to absolutely avoid that trap. And they've talked about making sure that what we do spend is spent effectively. For example, the Independent Fiscal Office, they were doing research on the effectiveness of education spending in Pennsylvania. And one of the things they found, and I want to read this from their study that
Please.
They just released January 26, the data suggest that there is little or no correlation between the current expenditures spent per student and the share of students that score proficient or above on standardized tests. So in other words, the IFO, the Independent Fiscal Office, has determined that higher spending alone does not automatically lead to a better education for our kids. Now, we've known that intuitively.
Yes.
But now we have some scientific data to back that up. And right now, Pennsylvania, we're already spending $19,000 per child for education, K through 12 education per year. That is one of the highest in the nation. And unfortunately, our results don't reflect that kind of spending. We have multiple school districts around the state who are simply not performing anywhere close to the proficiency standards that are to be expected. And so we've got to make sure that our response is not to just pour more money on the problem.
Correct.
But instead to create incentives that allow for parents to make the best choices for their children, that their educational options are beyond just the district schools, but that they have opportunities to go into a cyber or charter school or other private school opportunities or even homeschooling or pandemic pause or whatever.
Right, whatever right. Whatever choice works best for that student.
That child to thrive.
Yeah. And those things need to happen like immediately because, again, our young people are living their lives in real time. You only get to be, 11 years old once and then you're 12.
And many of those kids over the last 2 years during the pandemic have lost 2 years of education.
Yes.
Especially, unfortunately, the most vulnerable kids in some of the toughest areas to grow up.
Yes. And so, again, I mean, Rebecca, as we approach these issues of spending and budget, how do we get that point across with the decision makers that, like in your field that you said that Pennsylvania's spend per road mile is much higher than other states. Well, how do we get more value out of the dollars that are already being deployed?
That's one thing that I tried to point out. Just recently, we had a bridge collapse in Pittsburgh, as everyone's aware. So we know that we have issues in our infrastructure, and we know that they have to be fixed. We know that they have to be funded appropriately. I think we all agree that infrastructure is a primary function of government. It should be a focus of government. And if we look at all the other things that we spend money on as a state government, I think infrastructure needs to be at the top of the list. So if we look at some of the things that infrastructure funding has been spent on, I know a lot of people have said, Pittsburgh chose to spend a lot of its transportation funds on bike lanes, for example, rather than the bridges. So I think we need to really stand up and look at what our priorities are and make sure that we are funding the priorities that truly are important and truly are primary functions of government. And I think that requires a top, level review of where our money is going. And it requires some tough questions on the part of our legislators who are going to be having hearings with budget secretaries over the next couple of weeks. And we'll be watching that carefully. But I think it's an issue of priorities. And we really need to talk about what those priorities are and where we're choosing to put money.
Yeah, the taxpayer resources are finite. They're finite, and that when state government overextends itself, when government at any level overextends itself, and when we as citizens, taxpayers, keep expecting more and more from government, it seems to me like the more functions and responsibilities that we give to government, the less well it does any of the things that it's supposed to do. There's this elephantiasis of government, and it's just suffocating. We need to set priorities, as you say. We need to make sure that the government is doing well the things that it's supposed to do, the high priorities, that we're getting the fullness of the value of the taxpayer dollars for those functions, and then the government stops and lets the rest of us live our lives.
Indeed. And 2022 is particularly important because it's been a bad couple of years. But right now we have an opportunity with elections statewide for legislators, for members of Congress and our U.S. senators and our governor, all happening in 2022. This is the time for citizens to make sure that they get involved in that process, engaged, and hold government accountable by voting.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And as the listeners have heard me say, representative self-government is not a spectator sport, that we each of us have to choose to live our lives with our brains turned on and participate in this whole function of American government. So anyway, friends, so good to be with you as ever. We're down to the last bit of time that we have. Just closing thoughts from you, Steve.
Again, the key here is that we cannot allow government to keep throwing more and more logs onto the inflationary fire that's already burning in our economy. We've got to quench that fire, settle it down, but not through wage and price controls, which will only make it worse.
Rebecca, thoughts from you?
Absolutely agree with all of that. And the money that we do spend needs to be prioritized appropriately and focused on those things that government needs to do best.
See, this is why I like hanging out with you people. So we're out of time here on Capital Watch, but let's go around the horn here. Steve, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you do?
Our website is commonwealthfoundation.org.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can the listeners go to find out more about you?
They can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Governor Tom Wolf recently delivered his eighth and final state budget address, continuing an unbroken streak of proposals laced with fiscal fantasy. He envisions a 16.6% increase in state spending, totaling nearly $3 billion above projected revenue. The budget speech marked the beginning of the lame duck governor's efforts to frame what he believes to be his legacy. To that end, Wolf has proposed yet another massive increase in state education spending to go along with the hefty annual increases that, according to at least one recent report, have yielded no improvement in student academic achievement. Charles Mitchell of the Commonwealth Foundation recently pointed out that, quote, Governor Wolf took credit for shoring up the state's rainy day fund, balancing the budget without raising taxes, public pension reform, putting wine in grocery stores, and potentially leaving a surplus to his successor, end quote. Mitchell correctly noted, quote, these materialize not because of Wolf's leadership, but despite his opposition. The governor's true legacy will be none of those things. Wolf's legacy will be framed by his handling or mishandling of the COVID-19 pandemic. And that legacy is one of ineptitude that inflicted economic suffering and, tragically, death upon the people of Penn's Woods. Early in the pandemic, Pennsylvania was one of a number of states that implemented a policy of returning patients still suffering from COVID-19 infections into nursing and personal care homes. The result? In the first months of the pandemic, nearly 70% of deaths caused by the virus occurred in such facilities. In an ABC 27 News report, State Senator John Udiachek of Luzerne County termed the situation at nursing homes, quote, a tragedy of Shakespearean proportion, and it begs for accountability. Unfortunately, neither Tom Wolf nor his complicit former health secretary, Dr. Rachel Levine, who conveniently moved her own mother out of a personal care home at the start of the pandemic, have been held accountable. Blame politics for that lack of accountability. In New York, where former Governor Andrew Cuomo pursued the same fatally flawed policies as did Tom Wolf, the state's Attorney General, Letitia James, did conduct an investigation. No such investigation has occurred in Pennsylvania, where holding accountable a governor of his own party would have negatively impacted Attorney General Josh Shapiro's own campaign for governor. Tom Wolf's legacy also bears the stain of killing tens of thousands of businesses through draconian shutdown orders and restrictions. His closing of so-called non-essential businesses resulted in mass chaos. In typical fashion, the governor failed to consult with the business community, issuing orders with no advance notice and then constantly changed the metrics required for reopening. The result was a wave of business failures and a historic spike in unemployment. The problem was compounded by the inability of the state's Labor Department to efficiently process unemployment claims, a problem that persists 2 years later. Wolf appeared to relish the power. He repeatedly declared the Commonwealth to be in a state of emergency, utilizing a law basically designed to give governors the ability to deal with natural disasters. He assumed the power to bypass the state legislature and to govern by executive order and regulatory fiat. An activist state Supreme Court effectively rewrote the law and allowed the governor to continue implementing draconian and ultimately ineffective measures. Finally, in May of 2021, we the people had enough. Fed up with Tom Wolf's abuse of power, voters approved two state constitutional amendments that placed limits on the use of emergency power declarations and gave the General Assembly the clear power to end such orders. It was an unprecedented rebuke of an autocratic governor whose lust for power had gone too far. But having drunk from the cup of unfettered power, Wolf continued issuing orders. After first saying school districts should set their own mask policies, he reversed course and had his health department issue an order requiring students in public schools to wear masks. At that point, even Wolf's allies at the state Supreme Court gave up and ruled he did not have the power to issue such an order. Blue state governors across the nation are beginning to rescind their draconian COVID-19 policies. As polling shows, the public is rebelling, and the issue is now impacting Democratic hopes for the upcoming midterm elections. So governors like Tom Wolf are looking to change the focus away from the pandemic. But don't be fooled. Tom Wolf can talk about education funding all he wants, but his true legacy is a deadly, destructive, epic failure to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. And once again, we are looking forward to the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. The premier annual grassroots conservative event will be held April 1st and 2nd at the Penn Harris Hotel in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Fox News host, former Congressman Trey Gowdy. Former Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin will be the kickoff speaker. The conference will include forums spotlighting candidates for governor of Pennsylvania and U.S. Senator. An added feature this year is a pre-conference election integrity summit to be held Thursday, March 31st. As always, there will be speakers, panel presentations, and workshops. Complete information and registration for the 2022 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is available at paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.